from KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Penny Nelson. The two defendants in the deadly Oakland warehouse fire case are expected to be sentenced this week. It closes a major chapter in one of the Bay Area's worst tragedies. 36 people lost their lives when a fire broke out at an unpermitted concert on December 2, 2016. The building's main leaseholder, Derek Almena, and tenant Max Harris pleaded guilty to 36 counts of involuntary manslaughter last month. They faced up to 39 years in jail, but under the terms of a plea agreement, they may end up serving less than 10. David Gregory is the father of victim Michaela Gregory.
We just wanted some justice, some fair justice, and we don't feel that, in our opinion, that was fair justice.
The cause of the fire remains inconclusive, and a civil lawsuit against the city of Oakland and the property's owner is ongoing. Meanwhile, the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy aims to criminally prosecute everyone who crosses the border illegally. The people on the front lines of that policy are Border Patrol agents who take migrants into custody in between the ports of entry. KQED's Julie Small recently spent time with a Border Patrol agent in San Diego.
At 7 a.m., there's still fog cooling the road as Agent Theron Francisco hikes to a series of 30-foot wall segments, prototypes for a more robust border.
We have 8 prototypes, 4 concrete, 4 of alternate materials.
Francisco thinks a new wall won't stop immigrants, smugglers, or traffickers from coming to the U.S., but it could slow them down.
One currently behind me is almost, 3-4 feet thick of concrete on the lower half. That would take multiple hours to get through. And that would just buy us, a lot more time to get here to respond, get more agents in place.
So where to now?
We call it the Border Infrastructure System, the BIS, or the Enforcement Zone.
Part of that border infrastructure is a paved road that allows agents to speed to any spot that's been breached. As we walk along the road, Francisco tells me he joined the Border Patrol 8 years ago, inspired by his wife's grandfather, a retired agent.
He worked out of the El Cajon station, and just hearing his stories, like the camaraderie between the agents, like they always bragged about him and how good he was, like as far as sign cutting, because that's a large portion of our job is sign cutting, which is tracking people, tracking usually footprints or disturbances in the ground. So whether it's the imprint of the shoe, or now they use carpet squares or a type of booty around their shoe, it's following those imperfections in the dirt.
Francisco says tracking is rewarding and he feels he's making a difference.
Apprehending your first group of illegal, aliens, actually tracking them from the border for a couple hours and you finally make that apprehension. The first time it was like nothing else I've ever felt.
This year, Border Patrol apprehended 28,000 people in the San Diego sector. That's a 10% increase from last year. Francisco says there could be a lot of different reasons for that. He doesn't think zero tolerance has affected day-to-day operations. But since May, Border Patrol has separated thousands of children from parents who were facing criminal prosecution for entering illegally. Francisco says he's never had to take a child away from a parent, but if he had to, he would.
You kind of have to understand that where they're coming from, they're trying to better themselves, but it's our job to apprehend them. You feel for them, but there's a right way to enter and there's a wrong way. And if you enter the wrong way, then we got to do our job.
In June, a federal judge ordered the government to stop taking children from parents at the border and to reunite the families. Officials are still searching for the parents of hundreds of children who remain in government custody. Border Patrol is still implementing the zero-tolerance policy for everyone else. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small in San Diego.
Well, yesterday we brought you the story of 5-year-old Filomena, who was reunited with her parents in Guatemala City after being separated for 3 months as a result of the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy when her father, Nazario, applied for asylum in California after crossing the border near Tecate. Her dad was deported back to Guatemala, and Filomena stayed in a foster shelter in New York, one of the more than 430 children separated from their deported parents. KQED's Farida Javila Romero is in Antigua, Guatemala now. Good morning, Farida.
Good morning, Penny.
So tell us, where's the family now?
Yeah, so the family was able to leave for their home yesterday in a village in the western highlands of Guatemala. It's a really impoverished region of Guatemala, and we're hearing also there's a lot of violence in the area.
How are they handling some of the challenges that the kids must be dealing with?
Yeah, so Filomena seemed really happy and excited to be back with her family. But we're hearing from mental health experts that these kids that have gone through long-term separation from their parents may face a lot of anxiety, even depression. We're hearing from kids in Guatemala who are arriving who are having nightmares and are very anxious about letting their parents out of their sight.
Has her father expressed whether he's glad he went or wishes he'd stayed?
I talked to him about it yesterday.
Era una buena decisión para mí.
At the time, it seemed like a good decision for him, but now it's a burden, it's a sorrow, because he had to borrow money to pay a coyote to travel to the U.S. border, and he put his farmland as collateral. So now as he heads back home, he's worried he won't be able to pay that money and lose that farm.
That's KQED's Farida Javila Romero reporting from Antigua, Guatemala. So now let's get you updated on the fires burning around the state. Firefighters are making progress in their battle against the Mendocino Complex fires, which have scorched roughly 475 square miles. The complex is almost 50% contained. Meanwhile, the Ferguson fire threatening Yosemite National Park continues burning as well. Nearly 95,000 acres have been scorched, but firefighters are making progress, and it is now 68% contained. Ever since officials closed parts of the park indefinitely, many of its employees have been forced to find refuge. The California Report's Alex Hall has the story.
A sign on the door at the Red Cross shelter in nearby Mariposa reads, "Keep door closed so we don't let the smoke in." Inside the open warehouse, suitcases and backpacks prop up alongside green cots. Some have people sleeping in them. One group of young men and women eats packaged sandwiches at a round plastic folding table. Concepcion Panadero came from Spain to work in Yosemite as part of an international exchange program. She and her friends say they signed up to work June through September in the park's restaurants, with housing included. But the fire started mid-July, and then they had to evacuate without a plan or the income they were expecting.
A lot of these kids are from different countries. They don't understand the language. They're confused. They don't know where they're going next. This isn't their country. So there's all kinds of different things going on here.
That's Julie Doyle, shelter lead for the American Red Cross Mariposa Madera Merced chapter.
This one just goes, this is day 25. Of the fire. So that's part of the problem.
Just that it's going on for so long.
It's going on and on and on and on and on.
The exchange workers say they've been told they'll soon be transferred to another national park in Colorado. In the meantime, here at least they have food and can use the internet. Doyle says the Red Cross will be in Mariposa for as long as people need it. For the California Report, I'm Alex Hall in Mariposa.
Well, it's almost back to school time, but some kids won't be grabbing their lunchboxes quite yet as the fires push back the start of their school year. The Mendocino Complex fire will delay the start of at least four Lake County schools, impacting more than 5,000 students. In Shasta and Trinity counties, though, the massive car fire sidestepped most of the schools in the Redding District, damaging only one elementary school. Redding District Superintendent Robert Adams says most students can plan on going back to school as scheduled.
We're planning to go forward in order to support our families, for sure, to bring some normalcy back to our students. And so we're planning on opening on August 15th.
Health concerns do remain around the thick smoke in the region. Adams says after-school sports and outdoor activities may be affected by air quality issues. Next week, we'll bring you coverage of the first day of school in that heavily burned area. So there's nothing like a home-cooked meal, but in California, it is illegal to sell them. There's a bill now in the state legislature to change that, and it's causing controversy with those in the cottage food industry. They worry the move may pave the way for the Silicon Valley companies to Uberize home-cooked meals. KQED's Sam Harnett reports.
A 2012 law makes it legal in California to sell some low-risk homemade foods, like bread, granola, and jam. That is not what Hai sells out of his house in Oakland.
So what's in this pot?
This is tofu here, and mushroom. And you eat the soy sauce,
Very simple.
Hai and his husband Joe have made and sold more than 2,500 Vietnamese meals to their neighbors. Hai and Joe aren't using their last names because what they do is illegal. They could face a fine or worse from the local health department.
It's always in the back of your mind. But if it happens, you know, if we get a citation, then we'll stop and wait for the new law to pass.
AB 626. The bill would allow Hai and other cooks to sell homemade meals from their houses and over the internet through sites like Facebook and Airbnb. But critics like Christina Oatfield of the Sustainable Economies Law Center worry that if this bill passes, these middlemen, or platforms, will dominate the market, squeeze profit from cooks, and turn them into low-wage gig workers. Tech companies like Airbnb have been lobbying for the bill.
We are definitely in support of decriminalizing homemade food. It just shouldn't be on the tech company's terms.
Oatfield would only support AB 626 if it had a provision that says cooks must own the third-party marketplaces, the websites and apps where the food is sold. It'd be like it is for farmers markets in California, which must be owned by farmers or local governments. But Matt Jorgensen, who helped write this bill, says cooks should be able to use corporate websites if they want to.
I do worry about where platform capitalism is headed, but at the same time, I think that it's sort of naive to think that we're going to be able to solve capitalism's ills in a food bill.
Jorgensen used to co-run a now-defunct website called Josephine, where home cooks like Hai and Joe sold food online. Hai and Joe now have their own website. For them, the endeavor is as much about connecting with their neighbors as it is making some extra income.
What are you making next time?
It's an open-faced banh mi sandwich like his grandma used to make. Hai would like to be able to one day sell it to his neighbors without risking a big fine. The state legislature is expected to vote on AB 626 by the end of August. For the California Report, I'm Sam Harnett.
Well, state and local officials have reached a $120 million settlement with Southern California Gas. It'll resolve public claims over the largest methane leak in U.S. history. But KQED science reporter Molly Peterson says that not everyone is happy with it.
Over 2 years ago, the city and county of Los Angeles and the state of California sued SoCalGas. They claimed the leak at the Aliso Canyon gas field was a public nuisance and a major contributor to global warming. L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti says if this settlement is approved, the utility will now pay civil penalties, extend monitoring around the gas field, and fund a $25 million health study in nearby communities.
We see this today as a good step forward, a comprehensive agreement that is not exhaustive, but one that gets the community what they deserve.
The public will weigh in before the agreement is final. Some Aliso Canyon neighbors and their state senator, Democrat Henry Stern, don't think the community is getting what it deserves in the way of direct benefits. Much of the settlement will pay for methane reduction projects elsewhere in the state. The deal doesn't end SoCalGas liability for the leak. Class action lawsuits with thousands of plaintiffs are still underway. For the California Report, I'm Molly Peterson in Los Angeles.
Support for the California Report comes from Paint Care. Through Paint Care, paint manufacturers make it easier for households and businesses to recycle leftover house paint with over 800 convenient drop-off locations around California. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. And the James Irvine Foundation, expanding economic and political opportunity for Californians who are working but struggling with poverty. More at irvine.org. And that, my friends, is the California Report for Thursday, August 9th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Penny Nelson. Have a great day.